This is PCJ Radio International.
On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. Coming up today, we're going to be telling you about the online backlash against a Chinese company that has threatened to start charging for the WeChat app. Also, we're going to be talking about interference, but not the kind of interference caused by other radio transmissions, but something closer to home. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus, looking at recycled paper and going, oi, it's jamming up again. But first, here's Paulette McCrory with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
BBC Persian TV continues to defy the odds by reaching record numbers of viewers in Iran in 2013. A new survey puts the audience at a new high of 11.4 million, up 90% on last year's figure of 6 million, despite persistent jamming of satellites from inside Iran and harassment of the families of BBC Persian staff by Iranian officials. The success follows a similarly massive audience jump in 2012, when the number of viewers rose by 85%, from 3.1 million to 6 million. Peter Horrocks, World Service Director, attributes the growth to the professionalism and bravery of staff whose families in Iran have faced intimidation by the Iranian authorities. How do you say something that cannot be found on the web using a search engine in Swedish? Well, until last week, you could have said "o Googlebar," a term sanctioned by no less than the Language Council of Sweden, and roughly equivalent to the English speaker's mouthful "ungoogleable." Unfortunately for search-challenged Scandinavians, Google didn't like the idea of its name being part of a general term for online search, and suggested amending the definition to describe only searches performed via Google. The Language Council, which is dedicated to documenting the emergence of new words in Swedish, didn't think much of this, or fancy a lengthy legal process, so the word was removed from the official list of new Swedish terms. The number of Swedes using Twitter continues to grow, with almost 500,000 people now using the social media site, according to a new report into the use of the microblogging site in Sweden. Hampus Brynolf, head of digital strategy at media group Intellecta, which carried out the research, told Swedish radio that Twitter accounts are increasingly being opened by women, the young, and by people living outside Sweden's major cities. The report, the third of its kind, shows that over 475,000 Swedes now have Twitter accounts, a jump of almost 200,000 compared to last year. Journalists and others in the media still make up the largest number of users, but the fastest-growing groups of tweeters include women and young people who use the site to follow celebrities, such as their favorite singers and sports stars. New users tend to just read others' updates rather than tweeting themselves, with only a small minority sharing their thoughts in fewer than 140 characters very frequently. Roughly the same number of Swedish men tweet as Swedish women. The average user follows 73 accounts and has 77 followers. Don Airey, the former Channel 5, Sky and ITV senior executive, is to leave pan-European broadcaster and producer RTL after almost 5 years. Airey, who holds the somewhat unwieldy title of President UK TV at CLT UFA, has been investigating a number of projects, including the launch of an RTL channel on cable in the U.S. Airey took up the role in 2010 after Richard Desmond acquired Channel 5, where she was chairman and chief executive, for £103.5 million from RTL. It has been a delight to be part of the RTL group family, Airey said in an internal announcement seen by Media Guardian. But, she added, I feel the time is right to move on to new projects, particularly my role as chair of the National Youth Theatre of Great Britain, as well as other commercial ventures. Airey officially leaves RTL, which also owns the X Factor co-producer Fremantle Media, at the end of the week. Streaming music firm RDO has a new sister company, Vidio, a digital service for buying and renting TV shows and films. Video is launching first in the U.S. and U.K., with paying RDO subscribers in those countries getting first access in what Video is describing as a special preview, which includes £20 of credit to test it out. The service has a focus on social features to see what friends are watching and share sets, the TV and movie equivalent of playlists, with other people. At launch, Video is available as a website and an iPad app with other devices to follow. For these and other media news stories, we invite you to visit the Kim Andrew Elliott blog. You can find a link to it at the bottom of our homepage. Just go to www.pcjmedia.com and scroll to the bottom, and you will find a link there. That's the news and media for this week. I'm Paulette Macquarie.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, heard on the World Radio Network, Sirius XM, Sky Digital, and on great partner stations everywhere. Now, if you want to save money on texting or sending SMSs, especially if you send them internationally, chances are you're using an app such as WeApp, Line, or Skype. In China, most people stay in touch with a service called Weixin, or WeApp as it's known internationally. But when the head of a Chinese government ministry floated the idea of asking Weixin users to pay a small fee to Chinese telecom users, it ignited a fury in Chinese cyberspace. We're now joined by Hui Fertan in Beijing.
Apart from sending text messages overseas, domestically, within China, you can also apply filters to the photographs that you take, like you do with Instagram. Post it to all your friends and use WeChat, Weixin, like a walkie-talkie. And this walkie-talkie-like function is one of the most popular functions it has. And it's something that WhatsApp has copied as well. It's especially useful in China because it saves you time and money. I mean, if you write in Chinese, it takes a lot more time than it does to type in English. So all you have to do if you want to get in touch with a friend is just leave a message and it will send and you'll receive it straight away. So people are saying that Weixin or WeChat is doing to SMS and mobiles what Skype has done to international calling on landlines.
So tell me then about the comments this government official made. Also, who is this government official? What did he say? And what sort of reaction did it get?
So this was a comment from the guy who heads the Ministry of Industry and Information Technologies. And in mid-March, there were reports already, there were rumors that the telcos were negotiating with Tencent to start charging for Weixin or WeChat. And then this government official said, we may start imposing charges, but it will not. The reports are not specific at all, so it's not clear exactly how this would all how users would be charged. I mean, you already pay if you subscribe to a telco data service. You already pay for that data service, and what are you going to do? Pay twice? I mean, it's not clear at all, and it doesn't make sense. But I think users are pretty outraged because this is clearly it's wrong based on principle. It's anti-competitive, and if it does go ahead, it would essentially be punishing innovation because it sets a precedent, you know. I mean, we all know that the smartphone and mobile phone industry in general, app industry, it's very, very competitive. It moves so fast. And if you can't keep up, you just lose big time. But if you want to be in the game, you have to be very creative, right, and stay ahead of everyone through your own creativity and not by punishing users or private businesses like this in this way. But obviously the telcos, they see the impact that Weixin has had on their profits and they're not very happy about it. And another argument that they put forward is that it affects the quality of the other services because the 300 million users on Weixin, they put so much data on the services and it affects everything else. That's one of the arguments.
Now, because of the heated reaction, because of the comments that he made, have there been any actual shifts yet? I mean, are people still using the app? Are more people using it? Or are there some people now starting to think, I should look at an alternative?
Well, I don't think they're making the move straight away because so many people here still use Weixin. It's still free. But I think if these charges do come to pass, then maybe people will start thinking twice before sending messages. But again, it's not clear how users might be charged for this. You know, there's no detailed proposal has been put out yet. I think users will only start abandoning the app and move on to something else if their friends do, and they might not necessarily take up something else that one of the telcos has created. They will if their friends are using it, but I think their first instinct will be to look for something else that is free. You know, perhaps the officials from this particular ministry are just testing the waters to see what sort of public reaction they might get if this comes to pass, because this is, after all, a very good way of getting the pulse of society. Many people in China, urban China, they're very wired, they're connected, and so if you want to float any idea, then you know it really is a good way to test the market.
And that was Hui Furtay in Beijing. Last week, we told you about an interesting test that we did, an interesting broadcast test that we did on March 31st to listeners in the Caribbean, North America, and Latin America. And that was broadcasting a radiogram. And that was very successful, in fact. We got a number of individuals that were able to decode the message that we sent out. What in particular is interesting is we had a couple of reports that came in from Cuba, and they were using a very primitive software and very, very old computers, and the signal managed to get through, and they were able to decode the message that we put out. Now, we're going to be doing it again on April 7th, so that's tomorrow, April 7th at 0227, at 0227 UTC, on 9,955 kilohertz. The frequency again, 9,955 kilohertz. This message is going to be slightly different. It will be the propagation forecast, but we're also going to have a little message in Spanish. Now, the reason for that is the software that we're using sometimes doesn't always decode some of the accents that you have in the Spanish language. So we're going to be testing it out. So do check it out. April 7th at 0227 UTC on 9,955 kilohertz. And we're going to be using the same setting that we used last week, MFSK32. That's MFSK32. Now, if you want more information on the software that you need to decode this radiogram, just go to the PCJ website. And once you're at pcjmedia.com, if you look on the right menu and scroll down a bit to where it says latest news, you'll see a headline that says PCJ Radiogram, April 7th, 2013. There's also a link in there for the software that you need, and it's available for PC, Linux, and Apple computers. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399, and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
Now we're going to talk about interference. Not the kind of interference caused, let's say, by other broadcasters, either unintentionally or intentionally. Instead, interference that's caused within the home. Now, I remember a long, long time ago, too many years, actually, too many years, I wish I could forget them. I had this really nice shortwave radio, and I used to listen in my bedroom when I was a kid to broadcast from the BBC, Radio Netherlands, and other international broadcasters. And then I remember all of a sudden, I don't remember how it happened, but let's say I was listening to the BBC. I would hear this terrible noise, and I couldn't hear the BBC for about a minute. And then it would stop. And it happened the next day around the same time. It was in the morning. Well, I realized what the noise was. My mother was in her bathroom, and she would use the hairdryer, and the hairdryer would cause so much interference that it would just knock everything off the dial. It just sounded like a mortar running with a lot of static. There are a lot of people you can speak to that remember these kind of things that would happen. Either it was a hairdryer, blender, or even vacuum. In today's world, we have many more forms of interference that we have to deal with. One of the big sources of interference today for radio, both shortwave and medium wave, is energy-saving light bulbs. As you know, in many countries around the world, it is almost near to impossible to find the old-style incandescent bulbs. Today, they're either the energy-saving fluorescent-type bulbs or LED bulbs. While it's true these companies are supposed to follow guidelines to prevent any type of interference, well, this doesn't always happen. So they do cause a lot of noise. That's one source. The other source, computers. That's right, computers, laptops and PCs. Mobile phones cause a lot of interference. If you put your mobile phone near your shortwave radio or FM radio or any type of radio and ask a friend to call you, you'll hear it right away. Also, new television sets, LED TVs and plasma TVs also cause a lot of interference. So, yes, there's more interference around us now than there once was. At this very moment, I'm working on a new video for Media Network Plus, which should be made available in about 2 weeks' time, and I'm going to be showing off different energy-saving bulbs that cause interference and ones that don't, because it really boils down to one thing. You get what you pay for. If you buy really inexpensive energy-saving bulbs, you're going to be causing interference. But if you buy more expensive ones, maybe $5 more or whatever, it does make a big difference. And of course, depending on the brand as well. Well, I mentioned this on our Facebook page, and one of our good friends and listeners, Ian Baxter, who lives in Australia, has a lot of knowledge about this because he contacted Australian authorities a number of years ago about interference issues over this. And he was basically told, well, shortwave is on its way out. Everything is going to the internet. That's right. They decided not to do anything. And apparently this is not unusual. I've heard the same thing from people that have dealt with Industry Canada in Canada when they've tried to report interference issues. Well, joining us now via Skype is Ian Baxter in Australia.
The manufacturers are supposed to adhere to guidelines. They're set up, in the case of Australia and New Zealand, by certain electromagnetic compatibility standards. And I think the problem we have here is that while the device may have been tested, it's not actually being enforced, or doesn't seem to be being enforced in very many occasions. And that, of course, gives rise to a lot of interference issues. And it's not until customers might complain about something that really provides a lot of interference to, say, domestic local radio that something might get done. And it's often left in the case of the customer to sort out the issues with their neighbours, for example.
In Australia, what is the situation? I have a friend of mine in Montreal, and when he contacted Industry Canada about some interference issues that he was having, they more or less ignored him. And they said, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. You should contact the manufacturer.
Mm.
Sort of passing the buck.
I'm sure a lot of that is going on. I can't actually say what the situation is, and it may vary. I think if you do lodge a complaint with, in Australia, it's the Australian Communications Authority, I think you normally pay something like a $50 or $60 fee. If you can't actually resolve it, mm-hmm. or can't find out where the interference is, they'll come out after you've completed the paperwork and perhaps track down where the interference is. But, if it's a piece of neighbour's equipment, then it's normally left between you and the neighbour to perhaps sort it out amicably. If that's at all possible. Regarding the equipment itself, if it's a widespread problem, it may be a case of going back to the manufacturer. I think it's probably a case of seeing how bad the problem is. The problem, I think, with a lot of the manufacturing, however, is that the government organisations and the people who make up the standards seem to be more in favour of supporting the manufacturers, more concerned about their costs, such that the market's essentially flooded with products that the first priority is cost rather than looking at interference issues. Generally, the more you pay for a product, perhaps the better quality it might be, perhaps the less interference you might result from that.
There was a guy that I was talking to in London, and in Europe, it's a lot of people still listen to long wave, and he told me for almost 2 years now, at night he couldn't listen to long wave. He just couldn't listen to long wave. And then all of a sudden he figured out why. A family that lives next door to him, they went away for a week, and at night there was no problem listening to long wave. And what he did is he set up his radio and he turned it on at 6 o'clock and just left the recorder running. And when they turned on their television, everything on long wave just went blank. So he contacted them next door and he said, do you have a grounding problem or something? And he said, I can't listen to anything on long wave. And they said, well, why would you want to listen to the BBC?
This sounds similar to the problem I had when I actually brought up the issue when Australia was and New Zealand were looking at devising some electromagnetic compatibility and interference standards. I was essentially concerned about what effect that it would have on shortwave. To me, it was looking at the early draft standards that there'd be no protection or very little protection for shortwave at all. So I rang the gentleman in the Australian Communications Authority, and I was essentially told that shortwave's a dying medium. It'll broadcast will soon be transmitted on the internet. So, I was more than a little disappointed by that response. I was basically told, tough. and essentially, after all this time, it's come to play out that we're left with a situation where my worst fears have come to play, whereby you've got worsening interference now. And I think that's perhaps one of the reasons why several people have left shortwave, and perhaps as a result of the loss of listeners, we've got less broadcasters out there transmitting to the various parts of the world.
Well, with shortwave listeners, Ian, I mean, it's interesting that you bring up that subject, because recently, just a couple of days ago, the BBC World Service reduced many of their transmissions, and they already said that they're going to lose many listeners. And I remember a number of years ago when they started reducing transmissions to Southeast Asia, they cut back on frequencies, they cut back on hours, and then they said, oh, we have to reduce more because nobody's listening. And I was thinking, well, the reason why nobody's listening because they can't find you anymore.
Well, I think even in my situation, the interference is, you can do your best to try and reduce a lot of interference, but particularly when you're living in built-up areas of cities and more people are moving into units, it becomes just too difficult. You either give up your hobby, or you essentially perhaps DX or shortwave listen in a quieter area. Sure, there's a few things that you can do to help minimise or combat the interference, but to many people it all becomes far too hard, particularly when perhaps the internet's an option.
Now, what about medium wave in Australia? Because for many countries, for example, in the US, medium wave is still very popular, and a lot of the modern electronic items that we have interfere with local medium wave stations, just as they do here in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
If you mention this, let's say, to government officials, do they just say the same thing? Oh, medium wave is also out. You can listen on the internet now, or what?
There's still a lot of people listening to medium wave in this country. And generally, I guess it depends on each person's situation. If you've got a strong enough signal, it might be fine. But I do notice when I'm driving about that, well, there'll be areas where you get problems with interference, one being traffic lights is a major one, underneath power lines. At the moment, MediumWave's still popular here, but I guess since they've introduced DAB Plus here, they might be perhaps be encouraging people to take that and use that avenue to listen to their local broadcast stations.
In the US right now, and in some other countries, they've been experimenting by sending the internet through power lines.
I think that source of interference has been right up there when you look at sources of interference. I think I've had somebody here transmit that, and it just almost completely wipes out all but the very strongest of shortwave stations here. And I could well imagine that it had the same effect on the weaker medium wave stations as well. I've seen a lot of complaints in US, or particularly the UK, regarding that. And I know they're selling the several retailers are selling that equipment here. Fortunately, it's not a lot of people using that, but it's one of those sources of interference that, again, if one was to make a complaint to government authorities, perhaps they might suggest you work it out between you and your neighbour.
That's right. You have to deal with it with your neighbour. I was speaking there with Ian Baxter. I hope he has good neighbours. I have a few that are, well, a little bit sketchy, but that's another story. Anyway, with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus. If you wish to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Now, normally at this time, we would bring you the propagation report, but Dan is feeling a little bit under the weather this week. But don't worry about it. You can still catch the text of it April 7th at 0227 UTC on 9,955 kilohertz to the Caribbean, Latin America, and North America, as we're going to be putting it out as a radiogram, and the radiogram will be in English and some Spanish. So, on behalf of Dan Hensley and Paulette McQuarrie, this is Keith Powell wishing you well, hoping that you join us again in 7 days' time. 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.